Welcome back to the Extension Experience Podcast. I'm Dana Zook. We are back on the Oklahoma State Campus at the College of Veterinary Medicine. I am joined today by Dr. Rosalind Biggs, OSU Beef Extension Specialist and Director of Continuing Education for the Vet School. Dr. Biggs, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Since it's been a little while since you've been on the podcast, do you mind telling the listeners a little bit about your background? You are a native of Oklahoma, so how did you become a veterinarian?
Absolutely. So I am in fact a native Oklahoman. I'm a second generation veterinarian, OSU veterinarian. I guess I need to make sure I clarify. My mother graduated here in the late 70s, and I was very fortunate to graduate here in 2004, however old that makes me. But my students make me feel old on a regular basis, but I don't feel that old except first thing in the morning. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
However, I graduated from Chickasha High School. My family had farming operations in that area in Grady County, Chickasha, and Verdon, the greater Chickasha Metroplex. And so I came to Oklahoma State. I got an AgEcon degree first, then came on to veterinary school. I was in private practice. I didn't do what they tell you to do. They tell you to go somewhere else and make all your mistakes. Don't go home. But I didn't listen. And so I went home and made all my mistakes. Yeah. And fortunately, I had good clients there that gave me a tremendous amount of grace. And then I worked for the United States Department of Agriculture doing a variety of things as a field veterinary medical officer, and later focused on international exports for about 12 years. And then I am almost to my 5-year anniversary in July of 2024, and I have my favorite job here at Oklahoma State.
That's awesome. Well, I can't believe it's been 5 years.
I know, it's gone really fast.
I've almost rolled over my 10-year here in the mid-March.
So yeah, you get a pin or a cake or something.
Yes,
that,
I think that they send you a little catalog and you get some sort of goodie.
Yeah.
Well, and we're so glad to have you on staff, Rosalind, or Dr. Biggs, as I should probably say on
Rosalind's
the podcast.
Fine. Rosalind's fine.
She's an excellent resource for OSU Extension. She serves the entire state. So if you think about our 77 counties and the Extension educators and the questions she gets, and she has a role here on staff at the medical college, and you're the director of the
Director of Continuing Education.
Yep.
And so I have a team, a fantastic team here that we put on continuing education events, both in person and virtual. And then we also have developed an online continuing education catalog for graduate veterinarians and other veterinary professionals, because if you're going to be a veterinarian, you got to be a lifelong learner. And the state requires us to have that additional continuing education. So we try to make it very, very consumable and very practical for our Oklahoma veterinarians and then others in the region and then across the U.S. too.
That's very good. So lots of jobs. You wear many hats. Dr. Biggs, across the state, many producers are in calving season. So let's talk a little bit about that. The reality of cow-calf production is occasionally we run into a situation where we have an orphan calf, whether that's we lose the dam or we've had calving issues or something along those lines. So I'd like to spend the next couple minutes giving listeners some tips on caring for that orphan calf, because it's not easy, in my opinion. No, doing this when I was a kid, probably before I knew enough to really be very successful, despite losing or being separated from this mother, this calf has value.
They have tremendous value right now.
So I think having a conversation, let's have a conversation about that. Let's just start off with a calf that's been just born. Or do we want to talk about colostrum first?
I'm going to take a step even farther back.
I think the
thing to do before calving season starts is to be prepared. Right. If we're prepared, then hopefully we don't have to deal with these issues. But we want to think about things, worst case scenario, if we do have dystocias or difficult calvings where we unfortunately would lose the cow. How are we going to deal with that calf? Are we set up in order to do that? And these calves take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And so I think that has to be a consideration as well. If we are situated, if you're like my husband and I, we may not see our stock in the daylight at some times of the year for a week at a time, right? And so it can be a really intense it can be really rewarding, but it can be an intense time period as we develop these calves. And, you know, my kids here in Payne County, they've participated in the bucket calf program that the Payne County Farm Bureau puts on, and a variety of sponsors. Like, they love it. Like, anytime I would be like, let's bring this calf home, they would be doing backflips. So
right.
Highly rewarding, but pretty time intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to be prepared for that. So first and foremost, I think we need to consider and evaluate on this orphan calf whether they've had colostrum or not. Now, we know that if we lose the cow at calving, it's not likely that that calf received colostrum. The best option for colostrum delivery is going to be that cow herself. Now, that may not be an option for us. And so the next best option is a cow from the same herd. So think about that. If unfortunately you lose a calf in a situation and you have the capacity to milk out that cow, you can freeze that colostrum in your deep freeze in, you know, your regular gallon freezer bags for some time, and then deliver that to a calf that may benefit from it later on. Given those, I realize those are the ideal options, but the most realistic option for most producers is going to be a colostrum replacement. Now, we want people to read those labels, just like we want you to read anything else you're going to give your animals from the nutrition or the medicine side. We want you to read the label. We're looking for a colostrum replacement. They do have powdered colostrum replacements. It may be more challenging at certain times of the year, certainly as we're looking at, you know, emergency events or wildfire events that we've had. Those type of products are in high demand. So again, it gets back to, we want to be prepared in advance as much as we possibly can. And so with that, we also want to think about, how are we going to feed that calf? You know, initially, if you are comfortable, been trained by your veterinarian, getting that colostrum in that calf with an esophageal feeder is a good option. But if you place that in the wrong, if you put colostrum in the lungs, that is sure enough going to result in a dead calf.
Right.
So you need to be trained. You need to be very comfortable that we're putting that esophageal feeder in the right place. And so, again, discuss that with your veterinarian in advance of how to do that. We can mix up those colostrum replacements. And then I think it's worth mentioning, because we have high power genetics in the state of Oklahoma, right? And so there is a subset of our cattle population that we may want to discuss with our veterinarian. We do it routinely in the horse world, of measuring whether that calf has received enough immunoglobulins. Have they received the colostrum to help jumpstart them initially, which is what our colostrum is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, the other thing with the colostrum replacement, and I may have got ahead of myself just a bit, we do not want you using a colostrum supplement. You can use a colostrum supplement on down the road, mm-hmm. but that is not doing its purpose initially right at calving. We want that colostrum in that calf, you know, ideally within the first 4 to 6 hours. If we have a calf that's less than 24 hours old and we're not certain they got colostrum, in my hands, I'm going to administer some type of colostrum replacement for that calf.
Okay.
Even if I'm beyond the 4 to 6, it's not a cost-free
right.
option, but it is much easier than dealing with a sick calf on down the road if we can get that. So those are the things I want to start out with on those orphan calves that we find ourselves at, you know, within that first 24 hours.
So what illnesses are we preventing by making sure that this calf has
right.
colostrum? Like, there's lots of them.
There's lots of them. But, you know, the primary ones that I'm looking at, I want to try to protect those calves against viruses like rota and coronavirus. I want to try to help protect them against things like E. coli and salmonella. And so those are, it's also, just so I don't forget in this conversation, yeah. Dana, we can have zoonotic diseases in these bottle and bucket calves. And
right.
so we want to make sure, you know, I have my kids involved when we have them at my house.
Right.
Other people do too. We want to make sure that we're following proper hygiene after we're taking care of these calves, because it's not uncommon for them, for a variety of reasons, to get some diarrhea.
Right.
But there can be infectious causes of that diarrhea that can also cause illness in humans. So just so I don't forget
that
zoonotic piece
of
this conversation.
Because of a lot of times kids eventually down the road are the ones caring for some of these animals, because we have other things to do.
Absolutely.
And it's a really good project for them.
That's the reason why I had kids, is mostly so I could get those farm chores taken care of.
How's that working out for you?
They're actually in pretty good shape
now.
I highly recommend the over 8 years of age once you want to use full responsibility on them.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
So what about the situation kind of as an example where we've had a very young nursing calf, but we know that it's been with the cow for a while? You know, it's still pretty young. How do we treat that calf?
Right.
You talked about maybe hydration.
Being
really important.
These calves, in my experience, can get dehydrated pretty quickly. You know, as I mentioned, they can get their acid base balances can get really off. And so we want to work with our veterinarian on having an electrolyte replacement, especially if they get diarrhea. Right. Like we want to, and we also don't want to take them off. We've seen it in the dairy industry. They're the experts at bottle calf care. Right. Because mm-hmm. they're, you know, almost exclusively going to bucket raise those calves. And so, you know, historically, people would say, okay, well, if he has diarrhea, I'm going to pull him off the milk. That's not something I do any longer. I keep him on an electrolyte and alternate that with my milk. But we've got to keep nutrition in these babies, because they don't have a lot of reserves to be able to respond. But we want to get that we want to get that diarrhea in particular corrected. And so having the appropriate electrolyte, and your veterinarian probably has one they like more than others, but that is forward focus, and or they may have a recipe for an electrolyte mix that's very cost effective. So visit with them on what they recommend. But we want to have that, you know, again, we want to have that before we start calving season and have our plan.
So what about an older calf, maybe say 200 pounds or, you know, 150,
sure.
200 pounds. They're kind of getting along,
right.
But we wouldn't necessarily think about weaning that calf in the normal situation.
So in my hands, I want to get them on, I will tell you my preference is on a bottle. Some people are like, well, it's way easier to put them on the bucket. However, I want the sucking action of that bottle, that nursing action, closes the ruminoreticular groove in that calf, which means the milk is being placed into the right part of the stomach, right? We know we don't have, the true stomach is not the rumen, but we want to bypass ideally that rumen and get the milk where it can be utilized in the best way and it's not fermenting in the rumen. A lot of complicated anatomy and physiology.
That's so cool.
Not sure that I've explained it very well, but
absolutely.
I have a preference in my hands to keep them on the bottle. Now, I'm not going to argue with you if you want to put them on a bucket, because again, as we've talked about, this is time and labor intensive as a general rule, and it may for your situation make more sense. But if I can keep them on a bottle, that's what I prefer to do. But that can be hard in some cases, getting them
right,
getting
and keeping
them on
the
there.
Bottle clean.
Oh my gosh,
it's always
bottle care is super important.
Yeah,
especially if we're feeding multiple orphans or multiple calves at the same time, and so we want to make sure that those bottles are regularly cleaned and disinfected after each feeding. That they are drying between. Mm-hmm. We see that in the dairy industry regularly where they'll have thousands of bottles at a time.
Oh, man.
We want those things dry. Like sunlight and being dry can make a big difference when we're talking about pathogens. Mm-hmm. And so bottle care is important. We want to also watch those nipples. Like we don't want that nipple where it's just flooding this new calf, where they're getting too much at one time, but we don't want it to be so difficult to nurse that they become frustrated.
Right. And then they don't want to eat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
those are, you know, those are big things. I also, when I'm mixing bottles, I like to keep them at the same temperature. Boy, this is hard when it's super cold and, you know, can be like, wow, I don't want to mix up hot water. My milk replacer, we probably jumped ahead a little bit on this.
No, that's okay. I'm back and forth. So this is good.
Milk replacer needs to be high quality. Yeah. We do not need to be buying junk stuff, to be quite frank with you. Like major name brands are generally, and we are generally where I reach to, that's also going to be accessible every time I go to buy it. And mm-hmm. I know that's tough sometimes, but I don't want to be changing brands on these babies. And the moms out there can understand, like, once we pick a formula, if we're going to formula feed, we're going to stick with that one, right? Uh-huh. And so that's important if we're working with our local feed store, that we want that milk replacer to be readily available every time we go for the duration. So these older calves, they can have a little bit different sets. We need to be anticipating that they'll have some diarrhea, but we want to also then start transitioning them over to a more regular non-milk based diet, right?
Yes.
So I want a highly, highly palatable, you know, feed type creep, something like that. I have a tendency to like a sweet feed.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You may disagree with me.
No, I absolutely do
with
agree.
I will lend all the nutrition specifics to you on that. But I also like to change that out. Like, I give a little at a time, mm-hmm. right? And I want to give them enough in a feeding that they are eating it and just leaving a little bit left. Because ultimately, milk replacer is expensive
too,
right?
Yeah, I was going to say that. Expect that it will be very expensive.
Expect that it will be expensive. So, you know, maybe we need to think about, because these calves, there are people that love to raise bottle calves, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yes.
Like, there's whole sites on social media trying mm-hmm. to find bottle calves. You need to make the decision as a producer whether the value, I mean, these calves have a lot of value, whether you want to raise this calf or whether it would be best for someone else to do that. And mm-hmm. so, you know, taking the available value at the time that calf can be marketed and letting somebody else do the care may be best in your situation. So we definitely want to have that conversation. But back to the feed, I want it to be highly palatable. I want it to be fresh. I want to also make sure, as we mentioned, these calves can get dehydrated pretty quick. So I want fresh water available mm-hmm. to them. Even though you're giving them in a bottle,
right?
They still have, you know, high hydration demands, especially if we're in the summer, like those, you know, ideally we're not having orphan calves in the middle of July, but not everybody has the same, you know, breeding season as, or calving season as you or I might. And so want to have that water available to them. And we also want to have some kind of hay option mm-hmm. to them as well, that they can start developing that rumen. We want a little bit of scratch, so to speak, in there to get that rumen development started, because we want them off that milk as soon as reasonable. I have a tendency to keep them on that bottle probably longer than my friends in the dairy world do.
So let's stop there. So I think in my practice as a, you know, younger person raising some of these bottle calves, it was like, my dad was like, they got one bag, a milk replacer, and then we're getting them off.
Right.
I don't think that that's probably the best, but because of the expense, we were moving them on. So what would be your recommendation on how long?
I think you've got to balance it based on the age of the calf at the time we're finding them as an orphan, right? Mm-hmm. So age and development too. If they are not, you know, if they're not eating that grain ration or eating any hay we don't want to take them off cold turkey. Mm-hmm. We want to transition them over. Now, if I'm feeding them 4 to 6 bottles a day, they're not encouraged to go eat that. So we got to have this, have this balance. For me, I like to have them on. I'm a sucker. Like, I want them on it as long as I can. But realistically, 16 weeks, 20 weeks is when, in my hands, most of the time, I'm going to start pushing them, at least, maybe not cold turkey, but I'm going to push them towards that more feed, forage focused. Now, my friends in the dairy industry like to do it as they do it in a much more rapid fashion. And I'm not going to argue with them mm-hmm. because they, again, they're probably the experts in that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, over time, they will develop some interest for some of these
Absolutely.
Other feeds. And so encourage that interest to
for
a certain extent. Like you said, We've had a lot of questions in the past couple weeks about this. Good, high quality hay that has good color. If it's alfalfa, make it finely stemmed, very leafy. Yep. When I, in my past life, doing some ration development, I always said, you know, this is not the time to skimp on cost.
Absolutely not.
Oats, some molasses for smell, like anything that's not dusty. So whole corn is good, even if it's cracked, like coarsely cracked corn. But, you know, if you're developing a ration like that, but there's a variety of options out there. Like sweet feeds available.
Absolutely.
For little calves that are really targeted to them. And so there'll be probably, you know, a low level of a few pellets, but they're really decreasing the dust. Anything that's palatable that the little calves will like.
Yeah, no mold, as you said, the dust. I mean, we've got to think about housing on these guys as well,
right.
Particularly if it is in the cold of winter or even if it is in the summer too. You know, we are in Oklahoma where the wind comes sweeping down the plains. And so that wind aspect, even though you or I might be outside and be like, this isn't so bad. When I'm out there all the time and the wind is blowing, that can really decrease the temperatures or increase the impact I have. Because if I'm a calf, I don't have the ability to thermoregulate very well, either in the severe cold or in the heat. And so we want to be thinking about that. We also want to be thinking about these calves, how we're housing them, especially if we have multiple ones, that we have infectious disease that can be transmitted from one to the other to the other. And again, as we mentioned, sometimes to humans. So cleanliness of the housing area is going to be really, really, really important.
So Dr. Biggs, is probably some health implications for some of these calves. If they're from several different sources, there might be some issues there. So talk a little bit about the health side, you being a veterinarian, and what you would recommend.
Yeah, so I think you need to have a discussion. Again, you're going to hear me say this regularly with your veterinarian based on your operation, right? Like if this is a single calf, you know, which hopefully most of our producers are not dealing with these in any mass quantities, but you will have an orphan calf every once in a while. And so that's a different kind of setup and risk level than if I'm raising these from multiple sources coming together. And there are folks that do that. Mm-hmm. We need to be thinking about what are common health things. Well, diarrhea can be a big one. And so there's multiple causes. It can be viral. It can be bacterial. It's not, depending upon the situation, I may or may not reach for an antibiotic product. Most of the time, those calves are going to run fevers. If they run fevers, then they do not like to nurse. And again, we already pointed out, we need to keep nutrition going through these babies. And so we need to talk to their veterinarian about an anti-inflammatory option that you're comfortable administering if we start to run fevers. How are you going to know they have fevers? It's the handy dandy thermometer mm-hmm. that you can get at the drugstore. Get the one that reads the temperature really quickly, and we take a rectal temperature, and then we kind of know. In some of these, if I've got calves from multiple sources, I may be wanting to temp those calves at least daily, if not multiple times a day, because that temperature may start to elevate before I see other signs. So I really like the temperature as a gauge to indicate I've got something more difficult going on. We can see respiratory disease in these little dudes. We can see other, like calf diphtheria, which makes it hard for them to nurse. I mean, there's a variety of things that we can see in them. But discuss them with your veterinarian and making sure, Dana's heard me say this mm-hmm. probably too many times, developing that veterinary client-patient right. relationship is important well before you have a problem.
So what temp are we looking for?
I mean, I don't really want anything over 103.
Okay.
You know, the benchmark, like in the feedlot, is 104, of course. But if I start to see that calf as trending upward, especially like if it's 30 degrees outside and that calf has like 103.5, I'm probably thinking, you know, maybe I feel a little differently if we're in the middle of July and it's super hot and that calf has been running around. I also want to assess, like, what's their temperament? Are they bright and alert? Do they have a wet nose? Those
right.
kind of things are
yeah.
simple, right?
Uh-huh.
Are they getting up and moving around, or are they just laying down? All of those things become, you know, we got to take a moment and assess how are they feeling?
Right. Right. And if you've been around the calf, you kind of know
yep.
what they're supposed to look like. So this is excellent information, Dr. Biggs. We're going to list some really valuable information in the show notes today. We also have another podcast episode we did with Barry Whitworth, actually a couple years ago. So we'll add that there. And that has some good kind of a review on
hopefully
cabin management.
Hopefully Dr. Whitworth and I agree.
I think you do. Yeah,
probably,
I think you
probably
do.
Probably lean with him if the answers don't align.
Yeah, just we have great resources. So Dr. Biggs, as we wrap up, could you provide producers with a list or maybe just a toolkit of a few things they should have in preparation for this situation?
Yeah, so orphan calves, first and foremost, I want to have a colostrum replacement option available to me. For most people, that's going to be a powdered colostrum replacement that I have on hand. I need to have an esophageal feeder, and I need to know how to use it appropriately. I need to have bottles. I'm going to recommend you have more than just one bottle, because as these calves get a little bit older, they're going to have more demands than just a single bottle at a time. And then I want to have electrolytes be on the ready in case I run into diarrhea problems, so that I can do that. Oh, I don't want to forget. These, when they're feeling good, these guys will butt the heck out of you, right? And so find you a bottle hanger and a way to put that
right,
on the
absolutely.
Fence to prevent human injury.
Yes.
They will knock a little kid down in short order. Yeah. Hopefully they're hungry and you're keeping them.
Chasing you around.
Yeah. Fine. Invest in those bottle holders. And also, you know, keep a close eye on those bottles to make sure that the nipples in particular are not old or worn. Make sure that they're in good shape. We want to have a creep feed identified that we're going to use. We want to have clean, fresh hay ready to go. We want to have water in front of them, and then keep their surroundings in really good shape. And if it's cold, we want to have bedding for these folks.
Very good.
Okay, I think that's it.
That's an excellent kind of rundown. If you've got some of these things and you're prepared, I think you're going to have
you're going to have a head start.
Yeah.
And the challenge with many of these calves is they can take a turn fairly quickly. So we need to be, I joked, my kids like raising a bottle calf. I mean, it's one of their favorite things. But the adults on the place need to make sure they're regularly observing them, because these calves can take turns pretty quickly, and we want to intervene often. Add one other thing. Do I make it to top 10? I make a top 10 list.
Yeah,
do I get to 10?
It's 10.
Okay,
I have 10 left in it right now.
I want to have medications ready to go and treatment plans in place with my veterinarian in case I face something. I think that we'll just round it out.
Yeah, top 10. That's excellent. So, yep, have your veterinarian on call so that they can guide you on the best form of treatment for the symptoms that you're seeing. This has been excellent information, Dr. Biggs. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So listeners, we'll have some information in the show notes. With that, have a wonderful week.